When Swamiji had talked about Master once reciting the poem, God's Boatman, where he said, Master said, I will return again and again, crossing in bleeding feet, crossing crags of suffering, a trillion times if necessary, as long as one stray brother is left behind. And when Swamiji was talking just in general about what it is to be an avatar after time beyond what we can even begin to imagine, that one has finally extricated himself from the never-ending inevitable suffering of attachment to anything other than God, and finally reaches that state of freedom to then willingly, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to assume pain and death and limitation. And there's a real teaching in there, that in the Festival of Light, you know, willingly to assume limitation, pain, and death for the salvation of mankind, it's really telling us that the masters actually do step back into the world in which all the ups and downs happen again. And we certainly saw it in Swami's life. The people that he was closest to in the world, his peer disciples, with whom he had served Master so devotedly, became his absolute sworn enemies. And to the end of their lives, some are still living, have done everything they can to discredit, dishonor, and destroy his work. And he willingly assumed, Swamiji, but Swami was talking first about Master. He said, such compassion is unimaginable. I mean, think of us in the life that we live. We are generous by nature. We don't find ourselves on the spiritual path unless we have generous hearts. But how willingly would we really assume an illness in our body so that someone else wouldn't have to take it? You know, allow our physical forms to be tortured and allow ourselves to be humiliated just for the sake of helping others, taking on their karma. Master just talks about that. This is something advanced souls can do. They can take on the karma for others. He never urges us to do that, interestingly. He urges us to become healers to the extent of being able to regenerate severed limbs. But nowhere does he talk about our taking on the karma of others. I think it's a power so far beyond us. But this is what the masters do. I had a conversation with Swami in one of the cycles, and he was very, as I was saying on Sunday, he was very open about the ups and downs of his life, extremely open. More so, of course, with people he knew well. But really in many public letters, and he was famous for just telling whoever happened to be around him whatever happened to be in his mind. When we were in the midst of litigation, he was the despair of the lawyers, because he would say anything to anybody. He'd sit in lunch in a restaurant, and in our restaurant, and he would start telling the waiters what was going on in court. Everybody looked the same to him. But he was in one of the cycles where he was really looking with great longing to Master's promise that this would be his last incarnation and that he would find God. Master told him it wouldn't come until the end of his life. In a sense, although it was less explicit, it was like Master Paramhansa Ramakrishna said to his disciple Vivekananda. He gave him a taste of ecstasy, Ramakrishna did, of Vivekananda. And then he said, I'm putting the key in my pocket. And he said, I'm not going to give it back to you till the end, because you have work to do. And so Master told Swami, you have a great work to do. And you will find God, but not till the end. As he called it, death will be your final sacrifice. Swami often thought that he might meet some kind of a dramatic death, but in the end, not at all. But it certainly meant that his whole life would be sacrifice, and then finally death, and then that would be the end of it. But Swami was saying to me, you know, once I'm finished, and it was a tough time, when he was saying this, I don't ever want to come back. And then he said, after a few moments, I just let that sit. There was nothing else to say. Whenever he would say something like that, I would only say, we support you, sir, in whatever you choose. He said, but I know myself like that. He said, I know myself. He said, I'll come back to help you. And then I said, sir, that's the only reason you came this time, isn't it? He said, well, there is that. Just like that. He didn't come for his own sake. He really came for two reasons. He came because Master was coming, and Master needed him. Again, I looked to the life of Sri Ramakrishna because things were more explicitly said in that life. But Sri Ramakrishna used to tell this story of how he would tell this story from the higher realms about how this little golden baby was going to have to incarnate on earth. And that golden baby was him, Ramakrishna. But because he was going to have to come, he talked about he saw these great sages who were just meditating in the infinite. And the little baby came and tugged at their sleeves and brought them out of their meditation and insisted that they come with him. And that's how Ramakrishna described certain of his disciples, Brahmananda and Vivekananda. I used to know all of their names, I don't remember. But they were the great yogis, and the baby insisted that they come. He wasn't going to come without them. And I often think about Swamiji, how many lifetimes, just the ones he mentioned, William, when Master was William, and when Master was the king, Ferdinand in Spain, how he came, and he was Master's son. And Master set it in motion, and then Swamiji, in whatever life it was, took everything that his father, spiritual and physical, wanted to have done and finished it. So here's Master. He's going to be sent. You know, Jesus appears to Babaji, and we need to send someone to the West. And Sri Yukteswar would tell Master that story. And that one that Babaji and Jesus decided to send, and he said to Yogananda, was you. So here's Master. Where in the infinite does all this take place? I don't know. That's why the story of Ramakrishna is so dear, because it gives you a way to think about it. How do you even think about Jesus appeared to the great Master Babaji? You don't know how to think about that. We have to send someone. Was it Jesus himself? As Swami often said later, Master, he thought, was Jesus. So what was the real story? Babaji and Jesus agreeing together it was time to incarnate? And then Master had to find those who would help him. And Swamiji talked about two kinds of disciples. Those who came with Master to help Master himself. And he talked about some of those women who were really dedicated to Master, that they were going to take care of him while he did his work. You know, just be his friend, be his loyal supporters, you know, serve him in a very personal way. But then there was that impersonal masculine reality, which was Swami, which wasn't there to cook for Master and take care of his clothes and, you know, chat with him in the evenings. He was there to do what Jesus and Babaji knew had to be done. And then, of course, when Swami knew he was coming, where were we? Where were we in all of that? Because it takes all of us in our own time, in our own place, in our own way. And each of us has to make that commitment somewhere along the line. And as Swami described in what we were listening to, Master saw in Swamiji this deep desire to share these teachings. And Swamiji says, I must have suffered spiritually in my own life because I had such a deep desire to alleviate that kind of suffering in others. And he says again and again, Master responded to what he saw in me. And he wouldn't have asked Swamiji to dedicate himself to building the work and spreading the message and establishing this new Dwapara way of life, which is what Ananda is. Swamiji has created an entire Dwapara culture. He's taken self-realization into virtually or literally every area of life. Society isn't ready for it, but it will be. That day will come. And when it comes, it's all there. It's all laid out. And we too, clearly, some part of us, we have suffered spiritually. Because we could have incarnated later in this cycle. We could have incarnated in the time when the mission is established and the yuga is more elevated and we can simply roam by the Ganges or live in forest ashrams and follow only that single inner call. That's how Swami contrasts himself to others of the disciples. Before Swami came, good disciples came, but they were primarily interested in their own salvation. And Swami didn't mean that selfishly, that they weren't selfish in that interest. It's that they were simply one-pointed. I live for God alone. But in Swamiji, he saw something else. And that's what he nurtured and brought out. And we're part of that. You know, all of Krishna's soldiers look like Krishna. That's how they say it. But it's a very deep esoteric truth. Because it's not merely that we grow to be in tune. That as we become in tune, we take on the characteristics. It's that we become in tune by understanding what is being asked of us. And if we're on this path, and if we belong to Swamiji, and not all of Master's children do. I mean, Master has many, many families within the family. St. Paul used to speak of that. Jesus has a large family, and then he would say about himself, and I am the father of this flock. And some who are part of Ananda are deeply connected to Swami. And others are taking his blessings, but their connection is elsewhere, either to other of the direct disciples or in another way. I say that to you because I don't want you to assume an attitude because you feel you must. This must be deeply sincere, because you will never progress spiritually unless it grows right out of the inside of yourself. But if you do feel that calling, not only to Master, but also to Swamiji, or to say it to Master through Swamiji, take that very, very seriously. And Master said to Swamiji, he said, you will not only, this we said very early on, Master said to Swamiji, you won't only be a teacher, you will be spiritually responsible for people. What Master was saying, and Swami talks about it obliquely. He talks about it more that early on he thought he could just bring people to Master and then his responsibility was over. But then he realized that no, he had to stay with them. And of course, that he can't mean physically. But he had to keep there and keep helping them. Keep helping them. And don't bother to torture yourself about who is guru and who is not guru. It doesn't really make any difference. No. If you feel that connection, then foster it with everything that you have. Foster it in Master's name. And then learn from the way he lived. You know, hear his music, read his books, watch his words. I've read these books so many times, and yet every time I always hear something new. This time I just heard that phrase, the flawless mirror, and how Swamiji said, Master was a perfectly polished, flawless mirror. And he said, I had never seen anyone whose self-transcendence was so complete. When he was with other people, it was as if he became them. Not our moods, he said, of discouragement or anger or desire. But he reflected back to us how our own higher self was responding to what we were doing. Isn't that an interesting and beautiful way to say it? Because here we are, you know, that we are always, even in this moment, we are as much with God as we will ever be. We just don't know it. We haven't realized ourselves yet. But so that completely pure and free part of ourselves watches. And Master then reflects back to us what that perfectly free part of ourselves thinks about what we're doing. Now, don't then go to judgment. Because Swamiji was he's always been extremely, well, he's exemplified it, so that's the other way we know it. It's always hope. It's always the absolute clarity that you can do more than that. That's not worthy of you. But the result of that is to see our own great potential. Not to see our own limitation, but just the opposite. That's very good, dear, but you can do more. And what you have in Swamiji is you have the dearest friend. Our dearest friend. He's our guide and our friend. And cultivate that. Keep his company. And keep it like you would keep your best friend with you. Just always. And then let him be back for us, that flawless mirror, always shining back to us. Oh, that's beautiful, dear, but there's more, you can do better. And when he says better, what he really means is more joy, more love, more freedom.